Well, hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com. Click on the listen icon there or the iTunes icon and you can download all the interviews from there. I have with me today a kind of a financial guru. You have probably seen him on his TV or radio appearances. He is the president of U.S. Gold Coins, and he's written two books. One is called The Secret World of Money, and Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. And I think the books must be pretty well cooked by now, don't you? I think it's time to introduce and welcome to the show Andy Goss. And Andy, how are you doing today?
Fabulously.
Well, Andy, thank you so much for appearing on Authors Audio today and taking your time out to do so. You know, it's October the 28th, 2008, and over the last month we have had Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, a man who must know what's going on in the inside of things, declared that this was a once-in-a-hundred-year financial tsunami, and that must have sent shivers around the world, because this kind of thing has not only affected American banking, but it has affected banking in Asia, it's affected banking in Britain, it's affected banking all over the world, and people are very shaky on where we're going and where we are and where we're going. So George Bush and his government came up with a proposal to insert $700 billion into the banking system to help banks lend to other banks, the large banks to lend to other banks in America. And hopefully they all thought this would be the kind of thing that would start to get things moving again, although I have seen no evidence of that, and these things do take time. The strange thing is, you know, after 1945, after the war was over, the U.S. dollar was king, and, you know, you could go anywhere in the world with a U.S. dollar and people would take that as legitimate currency against their own. Even today, we buy oil and sell oil on the exchanges in New York and London. What's going on out there, Andy, and is the dollar in for a shaky ride?
That's incidentally what gave the dollar all of the strength that it
right.
enjoyed post-war, is this extra demand for dollars, obviously in a supply and demand equation, that sort of drove the value of them above and beyond where they would have been had we were just been relying on domestic purchasing power.
Well, Andy, I guess the next fundamental question is, this $700 billion, I don't think there are too many people who can imagine what that's like. Three-quarters of $1 trillion is going to be given to the large banks to then keep, but to also to lend out to smaller banks around the country, basically to get the banking system solvent again so that they can lend to small business, etc. Is this going to be enough to really affect the ominous times we're in? Is this going to change things around? Are we going to see life come back into the economy from this injection of $700 billion?
Oh, no, indeed it hasn't. You know, they haven't yet released any of that money, although it's starting to trickle out in the form of direct equity infusions into a handful of banks. But as far as the average homeowner, taxpayer, citizen, no, there's been absolutely no benefit to them.
Well, as far as I can tell, I mean, America is way over its head in debt. In fact, somebody told me the other day that it's costing the Americans about $1 billion a day just to service the interest on the debt, and that's increasing daily too. And of course, their solution in Washington is to run out with a $700 billion loan to banks, which further creates more money in the marketplace, and of course, it inflates the currency itself. So is this going to be of any help to anybody?
Well, indeed, yeah. And, you know, it wouldn't be so bad the government was creating the money. But the fact that we've delegated this to the Federal Reserve, and then, you know, now we allow the Federal Reserve to create the money and simply borrow it from them, I think this is the real quandary in our monetary system.
Well, that's right. And, of course, many people may know and many may not know that the Federal Reserve is really a private corporation and is not part of the American government system. And it just blows my mind that that is allowed to carry on.
Well, yes, the Federal Reserve banks are a cartel, more appropriately,
yeah,
of privately owned banks. There are 12 of them, and no part of their operations is owned or controlled by the government in any way. So this is unusual in that regard.
Well, I understand that the Bernanke-Paulson plan had three major points to it. One of them was to buy out the bank's bad debts in order to give people a fresh start and get money moving again. The second was to give money to banks so they would have enough money to lend, which is currently stopped or completely not working because they don't have the money to lend. And the third was to get the banks to write down their debts to effectively real dollar levels today, which would represent their assets as they are now. However, I understand the bank said no to that. They refused to write down the value of their debts, and foreign and other investors realized that the banks were not in the business of helping them out at all. And this is very disconcerting, to say the least.
No, indeed not. And underneath all of it was a stealth bailout. It was really hidden from the view of most Americans, and I guess we could talk about that for a minute. The Congress authorized $700 billion for banking reform, let's call it, and they set that in motion. But at the same time, they increased the debt ceiling to $11.3 trillion. Now, the Treasury of the United States issued $885 billion worth of Treasury bonds, bills, notes, evidences of debt in the last 3 weeks. And instead of taking that money and paying down some other item or putting it into the Treasury for use, They deposited it with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So this increased the reserve balance of the United States monetary system, or in effect it created a base upon which the Federal Reserve can now multiply money. Adjacent to that, they gave or donated or took an equity position, however you want to call it, the banks of this country, $250 billion. The nine money center banks are taking about $25 billion each. Now, using the money multiplier, they've added that right to their balance sheet, which means that each of these nine banks can create $250 billion, or 10 times the amount, in loans, in corresponding loans. Now, the Federal Reserve, having $885 billion upon which to expand its monetary base, brings us to a total increase in the money supply of around $10 trillion, or virtually double the existing money supply. And most Americans are thinking that we've somehow injected $700 billion into the banking system, when in reality, we've set the stage for the creation of $10 trillion in new money. And that is going to be the most inflationary thing we've ever seen in this country. I don't think there's any period in history that'll compare with it.
Well, this is what you're speaking of course, is fractional banking, right?
Indeed. Yeah, the money multiplier.
Yeah.
In other words,
if I'm a bank and I have $10,000, I can turn around and lend $100,000.
Yeah, as long as you put that $10,000 on deposit.
Yes.
With the bank, the Federal Reserve Bank, then, yes, you can count that as your reserves and use that as the basis to loan now 10 times that amount.
Well, it certainly was a very strange time, Andy, as we all know. You know, you had to use greed to lead, and the more the better, and the higher the better. And of course, people were flipping houses over all the time, and mortgage companies were lending money to people that weren't even working or even working part-time, and you had this fraudulent practice going on. You had speculators in the market flipping things over. You had the derivatives situation. And this bubble just was completely out of proportion to reality. And of course, it had to go. It just simply had to go. And people now are left, some people are left holding the bag that they really didn't have anything much to do with it. The scoundrels got away again.
That's right. You know, the entire real estate market was reliant upon this cheap source of firms in order to keep its train rolling. And once this source of funds dried up, well, naturally, the market would have had to correct. I mean, the supply and demand being what it is, if you lose buyers because they're somehow not qualified, why then, you know, you've put yourself in a position of making a market go down. And that's effectively what happened. But I think it's disingenuous to suggest that the subprime problem caused this issue. In fact, as I looked at the numbers provided to me by the Federal Reserve, I see that you could have paid off the entire delinquent subprime community with about $150 billion at the end of the third quarter. It's actually $148 billion. So, you know, why do you need $700 billion if you could have paid off all of the bad mortgages with $150 billion?
Well, yes, and there's lots of funny money out there, and the central banks around the world now are handing out money like candy to try to support their individual banking systems. But really, as I see it, this doesn't seem to be helping. It doesn't seem to be slowing anything down or making people feel more comfortable, does it?
No, indeed it doesn't. You know, the real problem for the better part of 90 years has been that the banks that own the Federal Reserve System have used that position to go into other countries and establish a foothold, and in doing so, virtually dominated world finance. So far worse than we ever imagined, 80% of the world's trade is denominated in dollars, and about 85% of the world's deals are underwritten by American banks or banks that are owners of the Federal Reserve System.
Well, I won't go into it very much, but I will say that the Federal Reserve was created in 1913 at a meeting of Congress in the very 2 or 3 days before Christmas, when almost everybody was gone, all the Congress people gone home. And so very few people actually passed this bill, which took the right of Congress, who has a constitutional right to create and print money, and it took this right away from them and gave it to the Federal Reserve. And later on in 1933, of course, the money was taken off the gold standard, and of course it became fiat money, which is just a government fiat saying that you must accept this money as real currency. And I'm sure Andy can explain it a whole lot better than I can, but it's an amazing story.
Yes. You know, if you really want to look at the history of that, it played out something like this. During 1907, around September of 1907, J.P. Morgan put out the rumor that Knickerbocker Trust was insolvent and unable to pay their bills, and that J.P. Morgan and Company refused to accept that bank as their counterparty. Further, 2 weeks later, J.P. Morgan, holding excess collateral for Knickerbocker Trust, refused to release that money so that Knickerbocker could meet its obligations. As a result, that bank collapsed and took a bunch of banks with it. So started the Panic of 1907. With that, we had hearings in Washington in which it was determined that if the power to issue money were centralized in a central bank, then entities like Knickerbocker Trust could no longer do what they did. Fast forward to 2007, The Bear Stearns debacle began when J.P. Morgan floated rumors that Bear Stearns was insolvent. And the following week, J.P. Morgan withheld $17 billion in excess collateral from Bear Stearns so that they could, were then unable to meet their obligations. And the panic of 2008 ensued. Now, what's going to come from the panic of 2008 is a further realignment of the banking industry in this country, and the owners of the Fed, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, Citigroup, and others, Goldman Sachs, these entities will swallow up their smaller rivals, become more dominant in American finance, and set the stage for worldwide monitoring and regulation of the financial industry from a supranational body that is not beholden not only to the citizens of the United States, but neither to the lawmakers of the United States. And I think that's the ultimate end goal of these folks, is to establish a Federal Reserve that will be good nationwide.
Yes, actually, that was something I was just going to ask you, Andy, because we're all our banking is really done at the speed of light today, isn't it? I mean, we're it's all computerized, and you know, you have your ATM card, and you can get money from your credit card wherever, and so it's really it is a worldwide system. You can take these cards around the world and use various ATM machines and get your money from your own bank in your own town. But a question that I have and that I've pondered is, do you think this is something that has been deliberately done? In other words, it's this whole fiasco has been something that's been deliberately let go, full well knowing that it was going to collapse, and letting it collapse to create a problem that a solution was already waiting around the corner. They had the solution. They were just looking for the problem. Now we have the problem, and now they have the solution. Is this something you've thought of?
Well, I remember Franklin Roosevelt said in the period, and as the president most affected, he said, you can bet that if it happens, it happened for a reason. Nothing happens by accident in this world.
Right.
And I think that that case could be made. In fact, using that reference, you know, once the Federal Reserve got the power to issue money using Senate Report 93-549, you can see that in the period from 1913 until 1929, the Federal Reserve did exactly what it just concluded, and that was increase the money supply above and beyond the amount of gold and silver in the vaults to pay. And that's what gave us the roaring 20s. And then just like a switch, in 1929, they shut off this flow of funds, sending the nation into what then became known as the Great Depression. And the response to that, instead of putting these guys in jail, was to suggest that, okay, maybe we don't need gold and silver coins after all, and that if Americans weren't allowed to go to the bank and get their gold and silver coins, then there would be no shortage of money. And this, of course, is a solution proposed. I think it's preposterous because the very notion of money is that which is not someone else's liability. And that's really the problem that we have with today's monetary system, is that every instrument of money represents a counterparty, somebody else's liability. And we cannot control the ability of those counterparties to make good on their debts. And that's really the basis for this entire problem.
Well, we're living under a monetary system that's really based on debt, aren't we?
Yes, it is. In fact, money as we know it is debt. That, you know, there's no other measure of it. In fact, there's a cartoon, a little animated cartoon at my website entitled Money as Debt. This is what we use as a basis for money. The equipment is the same, but the raw product is slightly different in that Congress issues a bond, I owe you $1 billion. And then that bond gets handed over to a Federal Reserve Bank, usually the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. They create $1 billion, either electronically or by printing it on paper, and then hands that $1 billion over to the Fed, over to the Treasury. The Treasury then has to pay interest on that money that the Fed has now created out of thin air. The Fed, of course, gets the benefit of all the interest, and we, the people, get nothing but debts in return. So that's the system that we rely upon.
What a deal. I wish I could get in on that one.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous myself.
Well, the deregulation of the Milton Friedman model of free market libertarian political philosophy really started to was that the market can regulate itself and we don't need all these regulations. Now we're starting to find that maybe we do need regulations after all. The United States has a heavy military debt. It has a heavy trade deficit. And it's all been financed, I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, by basically foreign investors who have been buying American dollars over the years, and that's been okay. But now we've reached a major point because foreign investors are not, they don't have faith in the American system due to all this crooked manipulation of the finances. Where is the United States going now?
Well, you know, it's funny that people would assume that we would establish a central bank in a country and then not maintain control over that institution.
Right.
If you look at post-World War I and then post-World War II, you'll find that the very same people who established the Federal Reserve in 1913 also went on to establish the banking entities in these other foreign countries. So to suggest that the official entities in those countries are going to do something as against their master is really flying in the face of reality. If you look, in fact, at the major foreign holders of Treasury securities as reported at treasury.gov, you'll find that at the close of business in August of 2007, the world held an outstanding total of $2.2 trillion worth of United States debt. Today, at the close of business, foreigners own $2.7 trillion in United States debt, or a net increase of 20%. And it's across the board, every country, Japan, China, the UK, the oil exporters, even Brazil, is holding more in the form of U.S. debt today than it did 1 year ago. And it's only the minor countries and those that would have some sort of philosophical difference that have cut their holdings of U.S. Treasury debt. But in the aggregate, the total is only $2.7 trillion of our $10 trillion total. Where's the rest of it? And the answer to that question is, we've borrowed all of the money from Social Security Trust Fund. We've borrowed all the money from the Medicare and Medicaid Trust Fund, and we've allowed the Federal Reserve to create in excess of $2 trillion, all in the name of sound or circulating money. And this is the real issue. It's not so much that foreign entities have bought the U.S.'s debt and are now disgorging themselves of it. It's that the Social Security Trust Fund and the Medicare Trust Fund have loaned their surpluses to the Treasury and now need those funds back in order to meet the demands of current retirees and future retirees. So that's the crux of the problem, not that foreigners have lost faith in the American dollar.
And, of course, if we look at the demographics of society, you're right. I mean, from now on, there are going to be more and more people retiring and wanting their pensions and so on and so forth. And where is that money going to come from if it's already been borrowed by the Treasury?
And the answer to that is it's going to be monetized. So this, I think, is the key reason why the banks are being given this $250 billion so they could put that on deposit at the Fed and use that as the basis for the reserves against which to issue $2.5 trillion in money, all of which will be necessary just to fund the shortfalls in Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid trust funds.
Mm-hmm. Well, just recently, I think there were, well, I know there were definitely the members of the G8, but I think there were more countries involved to try to sit down and look at this in terms of a world crisis. And I think Sarkozy was at the head of it, basically. And do you know what exactly they came up with? Have they disclosed anything yet?
Well, they've essentially come to an agreement to have a conference on November 15th which, for lack of a better word, we'll call the New Bretton Woods. Because in reality, this is what I think the ultimate goal of these other countries is, and that is to break the dollar's stranglehold on the world's economies, and in doing so, really put the populace at rest. But what we're going to come away with, in my view, is a basket of currencies instead of the dollar that will be triple weighted, probably U.S. dollar, European ECB euro, and Bank of Japan yen, the three of which will combine to form a new standard that was formerly held by the dollar in solo.
Yes. You see, what's really happening, though, of course, is the influence of the American monetary system on the world in general is becoming less and less. And does that mean that people will be able to buy and sell oil in any one of these currencies?
Well, that's not the case. And this is something I think that you won't see any movement on. In fact, those that control the Federal Reserve will see to it that their position is not threatened. And this is, in fact, the main goal of the entire apparatus. So the appearance of a compromise being reached might be hatched, again, where we have this triumvirate of currencies acting as a basket. But in reality, nothing will have changed because the same people control all three of those entities. So, again, no change, no difference as far as the consumer is concerned. Still control of the banking system by a supranational agency, which, again, unfortunately, won't have any allegiance to the American people or American lawmakers.
That's right. Yeah, well, if you don't control your own money in your own country, to my mind, that spells a big, that's a real big problem, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you've effectively lost your sovereignty. Now, my argument then is that we lost our monetary sovereignty in 1913 when we subcontracted the power to issue money to a group of private banks. And, you know, they now became the most powerful entities in this country. And if you want evidence of that, just go to the FEC, Federal Election Commission, and download the reports of both major presidential candidates, and you'll find that both are overwhelmingly financed by the entities that own and control the Federal Reserve banking system. And that is the harsh reality. So we now, as citizens, are effectively slaves in our own country.
Do you think this could get out of control even more, and we could end up in a kind of a worldwide depression?
Well, I know that in that environment, we would have no trouble gathering believers. You know, you would certainly have folks with a different attitude about their reactions to this. But I think those in power understand that the seeds of revolution are sown in that fertile soil of discontent. So if the American people aren't happy and they're in a depression or they're financially strapped and feel unable to respond, then you're going to see the type of action that generally you wouldn't see, you know, the marching in the streets, the political activism and things of that nature. And I don't think those in control want to deal with any part of that.
Well, you've heard of the Security and Prosperity Partnership. It's such a lovely title.
Sure.
Between Canada, America, and Mexico, which, for all intents and purposes, is looking at the idea at merging the three economies and not only the economies, but obviously at the political level, too. Now, I've heard that they either have produced or want to produce some coin called the Amero. You see that happening, or is that just somebody's pipe dream?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. No more than I see, you know, the plantation owner in 1861 South Carolina calling all of the slaves in and saying, okay, I'm going to divide the plantation among you guys. You know, Canada and Mexico are virtual outposts of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And the owners of the Fed of New York have established very lucrative franchises in both of those countries. The Amero notion was born from a Canadian think tank in 1999, the Fraser Institute, in which the folks, the investment bankers of Canada, desperately wanted to stop the investment bankers from the Federal Reserve from underwriting every single deal in Canada. And so they proposed sort of a currency board sort of a situation where the Canadian banks would have a seat at the table along with the Mexican banks, and that we would merge the entire North American continent into a single marketplace with a single currency unit. And this Amero was the given name and suggestion. That's all that it was. In fact, those that own and control the Federal Reserve Bank, Bank of New York primarily, are not about to split their boodle with anyone, and least of which, two colonies of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which is what Canada and Mexico effectively are. The maquiladoras would have to close instantly. You know, think of all the exploitation along the along the Mexican U.S. border that would have to cease in this environment. It just wouldn't be good for business.
Well, I don't think a lot of Americans are proud of their country, and Canadians are proud of I'm from Toronto, so I'm a Canadian. I'm proud of our country, too. And our countries are very similar in some ways and very different in others. But, okay, that's just somebody's idea. I'd like to get down to the problem of the average person, the average businessman in the U.S. especially. What is exactly does the U.S. produce anymore itself? It seems to be that the corporations have farmed out most of what the U.S. used to produce to Asia and other countries like that. And this is a real problem, is it not, that America is not really the production house that it used to be?
Indeed, that is correct. You know, the only ways to create wealth, to actually create wealth, are manufacturing, mining, fishing, and farming. And we've done none of those. In fact, all that we do is play with money. In fact, this entire bailout has to do with playing with money. Not until we actually engage in a program of rebuilding our industrial base will the United States rise as a great world power again. And I mean, it's simple enough to do. We have a wonderful automotive industry here. GM, for example, recently unveiled their new electric car, the Volt. And this Volt will deliver transportation in a comfortable automobile at a cost of about 2 cents per mile, as opposed to 12 cents per mile for the current combustion engine vehicle in the United States. If Congress really wanted to make a difference, they could take $100 billion, not $700 billion, they could take $100 billion and put it into a GSE like Fannie Mae, a government-sponsored enterprise, that would tell GM, okay, we want to buy 1 million of these new Volt cars and just start cranking them out as fast as you can make them. And when they come out of the other end of the production line, the sole customer, being this government-sponsored enterprise, would then lease them to American citizens who currently own an automobile for about $100 a month. Now, this would represent an immediate savings to the purchaser. It would represent a shot in the arm for the United States automotive industry, and it would go a long ways to reducing our reliance on foreign oil. In addition, it would cut the expense of commuting or driving your car from 12 cents to 2 cents, thereby resulting in tremendous economies of scale and money going back into the pockets of the American consumer. With absent these types of programs, or the WPA-type programs that the U.S. engaged in post-Depression America, you're not going to see a regrowth or jump-starting of the U.S. economy. All you're going to see is money shifting hands, going from one column to another. No real wealth being created.
Yeah, I know that with this bailout thing, that the Federal Reserve actually has a major control over all American banks now, does it not?
It's not so much the Federal Reserve as it is the owners of the Federal Reserve. So the owners of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York have now insinuated themselves into virtually every banking entity in the country. And with these top nine money center banks garnering about $250 billion, their ability to go out and now acquire other banks is complete. And this, in fact, I think is what you'll see, this type of an attitude.
The whole thing is, of course, is to be able to recover from this, is that the people have to get back to work. And in order to get back to work, somebody has to meet their payrolls. is the mechanism to, of course, the mechanism is to give these banks enough money to be able to safely lend to small business again and to get the whole thing rolling. And that's going to, is that going to happen anytime soon?
Well, not without emptying out the business schools of the professors that are teaching this theory of economics. You know, this idea of just-in-time manufacturing has extended over into the capital world as well. So companies don't stockpile capital, and in fact, they don't get bother to try to gather capital until they actually need it. So take, for an example, GE, a hedge fund in disguise here in the United States, used to be a manufacturing entity, and it has gone on an acquisition spree since 1998, in which it's acquired about $90 billion worth of other companies and assets. Now, it's funded this entire $90 billion spree with about $97 billion worth of 90-day paper, meaning every 90 days, the entire $97 billion is due and payable, and it's up to GE to borrow that much money because they don't have that in free cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in theory, that's a bankrupt company.
Yeah.
But in reality, we're going to encourage that sort of behavior. So that's really, I think, what needs to be revisited is the idea of this just-in-time manufacturing and just-in-time capitalism, which forces the nation's major economy-driven companies into the money markets, effectively on 90-day terms, to run an entity that, you know, is 80 years old or has an 80-year lifespan. It seems to me that financing your debt over the longer term makes a lot more sense than what they're teaching in business school.
Being a Canadian, I've followed the American concepts and dreams, the American dream and all that kind of stuff for all my life. And I see that America is really one of the, is really one of the world centers, probably the main world center of innovation. America was built on innovation. It was built on doing things that other people wouldn't do or didn't even conceive of. And this has to come back into the American way of life, doesn't it?
Indeed. And American innovation is certainly going to get us out of the problem that we're in now. It's just that when we're hampered by policies that encourage this bad behavior, this is the so-called moral hazard that everyone's so worried about. You know, when you have tax policies and you have manufacturing policies that encourage the outsourcing of manufacturing and things that actually produce wealth, then that systemic problem leads to a breakdown in the fundamentals that make an economy. So until we get back to that sort of innovation and that idea that we produce wealth here in the United States, we don't just play with money. This is the real difference between the America of the 50s and the America of the 21st century.
It sure is. Well, getting close to wrapping up, Andy, but the next president of the United States is going to be sworn in on January the 20th, 2009. In your estimation, what do they have to start immediately doing?
Well, again, this this idea of a work program where you encourage America's corporations to actually manufacture something, either in the form of that GSE Chevy Volt initiative I suggested, or a similar initiative involving solar panels that are placed on everyone's homes.
Sure.
You know, manufactured domestically, installed domestically, and so forth. These types of initiatives are the only thing that will rectify the situation in the United States. No amount of throwing money at banks or financial institutions is going to encourage or jumpstart that sort of manufacturing mentality.
Mm-hmm. So it's almost a New Deal kind of concept you're talking about, is it?
Indeed, except that you know, in the New Deal we were basically focused on infrastructure and these sort of intangible things that may or may not bring benefit at some point later. A direct intervention in the form of this conversion from an internal combustion engine to electric engine as a means of motive here in the United States, I think would solve several problems at once. So it's those types of programs, I think, that will have the most impact. The ones that help the environment, reduce our reliance on foreign imports, increase our gross domestic product, and rebuild our manufacturing base. Any thing that you get that meets all four points I think should be pursued with the greatest of vigor.
Well, Andy Goss, I want to thank you so much for coming on Authors Audio today to share your very special insights into what's happening with the markets and the banks and what's going on basically around the world today, which seems to be changing every day. I know that you are the president of U.S. Gold Coins, and I'm sure that some of my listeners, after listening to our interview, are going to be interested in some of your gold coins as a nice backup against falling currencies and so on and so forth.
Yes, that's right. I'm the president of USGoldCoins.com. I buy and sell gold and silver coins as a means of protecting one's wealth. And my website is USGoldCoins.com, or you can reach me by phone at 800-468-2646.
Now, I just want to remind my listeners again that Andy has two books that he's selling. He has one called The Secret World of Money, and the other one is Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. And if you're a person that wants to educate yourself a little bit more deeply on what's going on and what's behind the Federal Reserve and our money system, I highly recommend that you get these books. And you can get them through our website at Authors Audio by going to www.authorsaudio.com and click on the book photos, and it'll take you right to Amazon.
Never too busy for you. You got the hotline, so I'll talk to you again.
Okay, Andy, and have a great day. Bye now.
And that concludes another edition of Authors Audio with author Andy Goss. And until next time, this is Jake D. Steele saying, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.